Good morning. It's Sunday, February 20th. This is Wayne Ranney, the interviewer, and I'm here with Shorce Horseman, the Phantom Ranch volunteer ranger who we're doing an oral history with, and we are at the north side of the Phantom Ranger Station out in the little courtyard here that the rangers have constructed. And Shorce is showing me the, what do you call this? Germination factory?
Yeah, this is the nursery.
The nursery. This is where they are growing plants from seed to be put into the ground. Trees like hackberry, ash.
Yeah, pretty much ash.
Pretty much ash.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Shorce, and just tell us about this project.
Okay, so this is actually instructions for the rangers in the future.
Okay.
And so I've learned a lot, what works and what doesn't work, and over the years. And so I'm just going to show you what does work.
Okay.
And so I have these tubes, and this is the reason why I have them in tubes instead of pots. I've noticed that having them in the tubes, the roots grow much farther down, so they're basically a long a root instead of a big ball.
And you want a longitudinal root rather than a ball.
Yeah, and I find that they have much more success. So in the fall of the year, I go out and collect seeds, and there's a tree over by the laundry building on the southeast corner of the building.
Up at the ranch.
Up at the ranch. It has a ash tree that has viable seeds.
And not all ash trees have viable seeds.
No, they don't.
Oh,
and then there's one in the campground. So I collect the seeds and I store the seeds in a paper bag, not in a plastic bag, and I date it, okay, when I got it, all right? And then these tubes, as you see, I put a little screen underneath, and then I fill it up with dirt.
Do you have to get special dirt, or you just
No, I just get the dirt around here.
Okay.
And then I just make a little divot.
How deep does the seed go?
About that.
Oh, so just half an inch.
Yeah, so then I just cover it. Then I just cover it up. Yeah.
And what about the watering? You can do too much, you can do too little. How do you figure out the watering?
Yeah, so I plant these seeds in March, okay? And then you have to keep the soil wet, all right? You do not want them to even dry out at once. Just keep them wet, and then after about a few weeks, they start to come up. You'll find that half of the seeds won't go. So if I just watch the seeds come up, and then the ones that didn't come up, I actually put another seed in the tree and see if I can get all of those tubes with one tree in it.
So you start with one seed per tube.
Yeah.
And then the ones that aren't viable and don't send up a sprout, you put in another seed. What's that, 2 or 3 weeks later?
Yeah, I would say three or four weeks later.
Okay.
Okay. And then, so I'll just keep doing that. I keep them wet, especially first, they'll send out the baby leaves, which is they're very vulnerable. So you've got to keep that soil wet. And then later on, after a few months go by, we go into the summertime, and so things start to get pretty hot. And so one of the things that's going to happen is that I'm going to be, depending how the little tree looks like, I will begin to water less, a little bit less. And you have to look at that each individual tree. Like if it's doing really good, water less. If there's one that's having trouble, then water more. And it is unusual that you won't get that. There's like 15 tubes here, that you won't get all 15 tubes at the end. All right. Then when the temperature starts to go over 110, our humidity level usually goes into the single digits. And these ash trees for some reason get burnt leaves because of it. And if you get too many burnt leaves on a small tree, it will actually kill it. Okay. So you actually have to cover it up with a towel or a piece of wood completely covered up that it does not get sun. Maybe in the morning a little bit when it comes, the sun come over the cliff, but you do have to cover up because it doesn't take long for the leaves to burn, okay? And so, you know, keep them protected. But if for some reason it starts to rain, it's you know, rainwater is much better than the water that we give them. And so take the top off so the rain hits it, especially if it's an electrical storm, okay? You'll see that it makes a big difference, okay?
And, nice. I'm wondering, when you first germinate them, do you use creek water or faucet water?
I just use faucet water.
You use faucet water. Okay. Yeah.
If for some reason it does rain, I will catch the rain over there.
Okay.
And then water with a thing. But especially seems to happen when we have a electrical storm. It seems to make the big difference.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And what about the species of ash that you're using? Do you know if it's native to the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, so this they're native. They're velvet ash.
Velvet ash, right.
And the original ones that were sent down here back in the 90s where me and all the rangers planted around here, they were actually came from Havasu.
Seeds from Havasu cuttings from Havasu?
So seeds from Havasu, maybe cuttings, I'm not sure.
Oh, that's nice.
And so they were actually originally grown on the South Rim. And then they were brought down there either by boat or by helicopter in a sling load. And that's what we planted in the early 90s.
Okay.
So those have grown up, and some of them are putting out seeds. And that's where I'm getting these seeds from.
Yeah, it's my impression that the ash tree is probably native to a higher elevation than Phantom Ranch, but they're doing okay down here with some love and care that you've been giving them.
Yeah, they seem to do fine.
Yeah.
In fact, I have better luck with these than any other tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what about hackberry trees? Do you grow any hackberries?
We have hackberries down there, but I've never tried them.
Okay.
Yeah, I found out that, you know, earlier times, they thought fit differently, and apparently the hackberries were bought somewhere and brought in. So it's better to use a species that actually belong in the canyon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just say a little bit about the cottonwood trees and why you're not growing those anymore.
Yeah, so the cottonwoods, I have planted them in back in the early 90s. But we did have people get hit. Luckily, nobody seriously. But cottonwood trees like to drop branches. And sometimes, and when they get older, they really start, you know, dropping things, and then sometimes just keeling over. I almost got killed right over there by a tree that came down.
It actually came down while you were there?
Yeah, I was walking, and a wind came. And, you know, living down here, you learn to stop and see what your situation is when the wind comes. And so I stopped, and then, boom, 7 feet in front of me, it went clear across trail. The trunk was this big.
Is that the cottonwood tree that's between the Phantom Ranger Station and the Wrangler Cabin to the north starting to grow a branch straight upwards from the fallen?
Yeah.
Oh, incredible that you were there when that one fell. I've been watching that one for years and noticing how it's got a broken branch or even a trunk that's laying on the ground, but a new tree is growing up out of that fallen branch.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, then we can probably stop and then we can walk over to the...
Okay, I'm going to take a few pictures of this and I'm going to have you hold up a tube and...
Okay.
I'll stop the recording now. Okay, so I've taken a few pictures of the tubes that Shores is talking about, and you've seen the screens on the bottom. This is February 20th, so March is just around the corner. Do you look for any kind of local weather or trend in the weather before you start to plant those seeds in March?
No.
No, okay. No. So you just have a date on the calendar and that's when you start?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, I've noticed that, here on February 20th, a lot of times you can see the green buds on the cottonwood trees already, and I've noticed that they're very late this year.
No, they're there.
They're there?
Yeah, see, they're up there. They're,
okay.
You have to look with binoculars. And so the green ones are the females. And over there you can see the red ones, and those are the males.
Oh, okay. All right, so I guess now what we're going to do is we're going to walk down to Bright Angel Campground and look at some of the plantings you've made, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we're here in Bright Angel Campground between sites 2 and 3, and Shores is telling us about how he takes the tubes and then puts them in the ground.
Yeah, so what I do is I first dig the hole and make sure that there's no rocks, that it's, the hole is not heading to some rocks.
So you have to go a little bit deeper.
To make sure there's everything is good down there. And then I fill the hole with water and let all the water soak out.
Right.
And then I take the tube, I pull the screen out from the bottom, and then I put the tube right in there, and then I throw all the dirt all the way around the tube. Then I hold the tube, and I give it a shake, and slide the tube right out.
Slides right out, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it slides right out, and then I, you know, push it down and stuff like that, and then give it more water and water and water and water.
That sounds like a really good way to do it, because I understand when you're replanting trees, you don't want the dirt around the roots to get disturbed.
Right,
you want to
exactly.
keep that all intact.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the purpose of shaking the tube and then getting that tube dirt right there with the seedling itself.
Yeah. And who gave me this idea was somebody named Wendy. And she's,
Wendy Hodgson?
No, it's Wendy. She's part of the Grand Canyon Hikers and Backpackers Association.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she gave me that idea. And it works really nice. And so in the summertime, so the first summer of the new tree in there, I will hand water them twice a week.
With a bucket of water?
I measure it out. I get yogurt containers.
Oh.
And I'll give it 5 yogurt containers.
Oh, wow.
Twice a week. And then, and that's the first summer. Then the second summer, I will do only once a week, but I might give some more water than others.
Ones that need a little extra help.
Yeah. And if I have one that is not doing well, just not doing well, I'll give up on it.
Oh.
Yeah, because if they're already having issues, they'll always will have issues. That's what I have found. Yeah. Mm. The other thing that we have is... then our irrigation system, I water once every 10 days. And one of the things I'm trying to get people to understand is that in the past, we were overwatering the trees. And so this is what I did. I weaned these trees. I used to water them every other day they were doing it. And that apparently caused that the roots were not going far enough to catch the water, the natural water.
Oh, they didn't have to go deep, so...
Yeah. So then when there was a crisis,
yeah.
like the pump breaks, you know, the irrigation pump breaks, then we had a crisis. And that's what happened to me, and that's how I learned. And we were actually pre-warned about this issue by Kim Crumbo.
Oh.
Yeah. He came down here, and we walked around. This is why I was, just started... And he told us that we were overwatering the trees, and he was right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just thought that maybe the irrigation ditches were going all the time in the summer.
Yeah, not this one.
Not this one, okay.
Yeah. This is, and as you can see it, how the campground looks. You know, it looks fine.
Yeah. Much different than when I was a ranger. This was just a gravel flat.
The other thing that's happening is that we do have beavers here, and we have deer in the summertime, in the summer during the rut season for the deer, and they will take their racks and they will hit the skinny trees and knock the bark off. So that's what this wire is about, is to protect the plant from the beavers and
And the deer.
And the deer. Yeah. And we'll talk a little more about that when we get farther down.
Okay. Okay, so we've moved now to campsite number 4, where we've seen campsite number 4 and 3, right along Bright Angel Creek. And we've got another seedling. How old is this seedling?
This one's probably about 7 years old.
7 years. And yeah. This is also an ash tree?
Yes, ash tree. And so what we're going to talk about is how to wire it. And we've had, same thing, we had to figure out what worked and what didn't work. And so the wire has to be a certain thickness. And I find that when we get too skinny wire, the beavers can actually push this wire back enough and they can nip things.
Incredible.
Yeah, so it has to be 10 gauge.
Okay.
The reason why it's, you know, this is like 4 feet high. It has to be something that high because some of the beavers have climbed up, and not only that, some of the deer have actually nipped the top of the top, which turns the tree into a bush.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So the other thing was when we first started screaming trees, the beaver just lifted it up. And so we put rebar in the ground in an angle at about a foot and a half long. And they still managed to get it off. And so then what we did, so this is the Brian Wisher and, you know, the interpreter was helping all that us out. And we had, so I came up with the idea of drilling a hole on both ends. And at the bottom end, put a nail in. And then,
what do you drill a hole in?
In the rebar.
You drill a hole in the rebar.
Yeah, so a foot and a half rebar.
And then put a nail through the hole perpendicular.
Yeah, and then put it into an angle, and like this, and then pound it all the way in. And then before you got it all the way into the ground, then you take a piece of wire, and you wire it onto the fencing here, and then pound it some more. So it was real tight. Because it looked like that the beavers, even if it could bounce this, you know, go up and down, they'll just keep working it.
Huh.
But if it was down all the way, they wouldn't work it. Yeah. Also, the length, you could say the circumference of this tube is 8 feet. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's 8 feet around. So it gives you at least several years before the tree goes up against it.
And does the tree ever get big enough where you can remove the wire cage?
No, not with beavers.
Not with beavers. I can see that there's a tree over here that's maybe 20 years old or 10 years old that's still got its cage.
Yeah, because along the beavers here,
Do you currently have beavers?
Not at the moment, but they are here. They're farther up, and it seems like they're most active in the fall.
Okay.
Like it seems like a lone beaver comes down in the fall and starts chewing. And they'll go to every tree and look for weak points.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you have to always kind of keep your eye out. But right now we seem pretty safe. But you never know.
Now right here at campsite 4, there's a row of cottonwood trees, almost evenly spaced, right along the creek bank, maybe 6 feet above the creek bank. Are you familiar with when those were planted, or were they already here when you got here in 1988?
Yeah, they were all here before me, at least most of them. And so they had that 1966 flood?
Yes.
Okay. So then they brought bulldozers down, and then they put that fencing.
The riprap.
The riprap, which is 2 feet deep. And you can see the squares.
Yeah.
So they're baskets, so they must have filled them up and made this, what I call the Los Angeles River shape.
Yeah. They didn't want that creek going anywhere else.
So somewhere along the line, they decided to plant trees.
Okay.
Yeah, and so the beavers, when they were doing the cutting, they started hitting those first, and then they start moving farther out. So we started putting the wires from the creek outward, and they try to get ahead of us.
Oh.
Yeah, and this went on for a few years. And then finally, they gave up. Yeah, that was...
When did you start with the wire cages?
Well, it been pretty... It might have been still in the 80s.
In the 80s.
Yeah, because I said I came in 88. When I got here, they were taking off the hardware cloth. And I would... And they were taking chewing on trees about once a week. So almost every week, a tree came down.
Would a beaver work on a single tree or a multiple trees at a time?
Both, but a lot of times a single tree. And they were smart enough, like the trees that were farther back, they would chew on the backside so we wouldn't see what was going on yet.
Incredible.
Yeah, they were a trip. But yeah, so we worked on it for like 3 years, screening all these trees. And I think that, if I remember correctly, I used to have documented, but it was probably like 250 trees that we had to screen. And then after that, we started doing the planting.
Do you get much help from the vegetation folks up on the rim where the greenhouse is? I mean, are they involved at all with your...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't do things behind their back. I keep them in the loop.
Yeah, but they're interested is what
I mean.
They're
interested. That's where I get the screen and stuff from, yeah.
Because I'm thinking maybe people from up there might take an interest in how these need to be managed, and maybe even they could send some VIPs down I'm just thinking that if you wanted to make a suggestion to the veg folks.
Uh-huh. Now, the other thing, the bad part about the screen, you notice that I have an overlap here?
Yes.
Because that's real important, the overlap, and you see I have the wire on each side of that. Because the beavers were actually pushing in right at the joint when I just had it like that, and
that's
it would flex in.
Oh.
So that's why I have the overlap. And the other one is when the tree, so how the tree is getting up, it's almost to the top of the wire.
Yeah.
And the wire's sharp here. So what happens when the tree is skinny like this and the wind blows, it can actually hit that wire and cut it. And so that's why I have this I think that's a tube here to keep it centered. Yeah, once the tree gets this big, then I don't have that problem anymore.
Incredible. I'm going to pause the recording and then take some pictures of what he's talking about. Okay, and I notice here between campsite 3 and 4, we also have a mesquite tree. Are you responsible for that mesquite? Looks to be about maybe 15 or 20 years old.
Yeah, so So there were mesquite trees and acacia trees in the campground. I tried to germinate acacia, which was pretty easy, and mesquite, both are pretty easy to germinate, but the acacias were hard to keep alive. It was like they would never allow me to stop. They always were dependent on my watering. And so the acacia didn't work out. So soon as I start watering, they would start going bad. But the mesquites actually grow faster, easy to germinate, I didn't have to continue. They're only at the beginning I would water them. And then one time, the resources sent down with the crew 70 mesquites.
Oh.
And so we planted them in here, and so a lot of them are, especially along the middle trail here, the ones who are going over, that's a lot of them.
Yeah, when we go to the south side of the campground, we'll see that canopy of mesquites growing over the trail.
So here's one of my mistakes.
Uh-oh.
So I thought, okay, the tree, is up here so the deer can't mess it up. And so I cut it down.
You cut down this tree?
No, this wire.
Oh, the wire.
Yeah, I cut the wire down, and then within a year, the beaver had managed to find a way to climb over the wire. So I had to extend the wire back up. So that's what this is about. But again, see, I had to
Incredible. I can see that there's a wire cage on top of a much older
wire cage. Yeah.
And so the beaver was chewing on that, I assume? And
yeah, it would come up. It would climb up and then climb down the other side and then start chewing on the tree. Not this one, fortunately. But so I got ahead of them.
Right. But the tree didn't suffer mortality, it looks like.
No. What it did, some of them did.
Some of them
did. The cottonwoods did.
Okay.
I'm not convinced that the box elder, so this is a box elder.
Right.
That it seemed like that the beavers are not too keen about box elder.
Ah.
But that's something I learned later. Yeah, and I vaguely remember that when I was taking care of the kids over there at Roaring Springs, that I'm pretty sure that Bruce told me that. That he told me that they don't seem to go after the box elder.
What about Baccharis? Do you grow Baccharis or false willow?
Yeah, we do. This is a good one for that.
So we're here in campsite 14, yeah. Up against the rock wall.
Yeah, so a lot of these seep willows were planted so they have a privacy.
Right, they do form a good boundary between campsites.
Yeah.
How old are these Baccharis?
These here, I'm not quite sure. I think that KJ actually planted these.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was Dave Buccello who came after my time. Buccello was here in 1979 and onwards. And he was the one that sort of took this gravel flat where the CCC camp used to be in the 1930s. And he dug the ditches and started this whole thing of instituting private campsites.
Yeah.
And that's when this all started.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because sometimes people think that I created the whole thing. No, I didn't do that. It was already here.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing how quickly it did become vegetated once they did these ditches and there was water on this gravel bench.
Yeah.
Big mesquite tree here, number 14.
Yeah, so this particular tree, saw how many branches it has?
Yes.
So it's holding its middle by itself, so I didn't have to put that tube in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great, walking through the campground with Shores.
See, here's another ash.
Okay.
I probably should cut that off, but so you can see the guy thing is in there, but now the tree is thick enough, it's not going to hit the wire. And then sometimes I do it like that, see?
There's sort of a tubing on top of the wire cage.
But it's better the other way because it takes less material.
Right.
And so what I did here is on the south side, I put a tree so that blocks the sun for that campsite. So when this gets big.
Now, the group site at Indian Garden has a great big tree now. That's an ash tree, isn't it?
In the middle, by the group site, yeah.
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 And so potentially some of these ash trees could get as large as that one. That one has just taken off, and it's got it looks like a green forest.
Well, yeah, see the, you know, so Indian Garden, everything grows fast because one, it's cooler, but there's so much water there.
Yeah.
There's a spring there.
And here at campsite 6, between 6 and 7, there's a lot of prickly pear.
Yeah.
Have you planted prickly pear, or is that...
Yeah, I've planted on prickly pear. I'm trying to get people to block, but it actually doesn't work.
Yeah.
People are so aggressive, they just seem to be pushing into it. They're,
yeah. Well, a lot of times if there's two groups next to each other that know each other, they just take the shortcut.
Exactly.
Oh, look at these mesquites.
Yeah, so most of these planted with the veg crew.
So we're right here in front of campsite 16 and 17, and there's three large mesquite trees just on the west side of the campground trail. And I can see that they've been trimmed up with some real saw going through 3 inches of branches.
Yeah.
So that was something hanging down in the trail that you had to...
Yeah.
And I know the mesquites, when you do that low pruning, it kind of sends their energy up to form that canopy.
Yeah. But the natural mesquites wants to do this.
Exactly. Yeah. They want to grow high and then drop down to the ground, like the big historic mesquite that we have right near the trail to the boat beach.
Uh-huh.
That old guy.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going into campsite 16 here. Okay. Some beautiful agaves on the rock cliff.
This is an ash tree that...
So we're looking at an ash tree on the south side of site 16, and it's probably 25 feet tall.
Yeah, so most of the ash trees that are this tall or smaller was planted later after the ones in the early 90s. So this is... most likely that I germinated.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
25 feet tall here.
Yeah. Here's one here.
We're walking to the north side of number 16, and so, this ash tree is very small.
Yeah, so, but these ash trees, you know, they're past that first 2 years of hand watering, and now they're completely dependent on the irrigation ditch.
Okay. It's surprising that the irrigation ditch doesn't take care of the trees when they're young. You actually have to do the hand watering.
Yeah, the roots are too short.
They're too short.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and then this one here, so this is my one of my babies.
Oh. Well, we'll have to get you with a picture in front of one of your babies, but we've walked over back against the cliff where the agaves are growing on the cliff.
So this is a redbud tree.
Oh.
The redbud trees were actually the first trees that I learned to germinate.
Okay.
And it was hard. It was, so I had to do a lot of experimenting, and I had heard that on top they had a lot of trouble with it, and not only having trouble germinating them, but also transplanting them somewhere. They had a high death rate. And the other problem was that they like to be higher up and or tend to be on cliffs facing north. So So they didn't particularly seem, from what I could tell, like they didn't like heat. So anyway, so I collected seeds. So I decided to find seeds that were in a hot place and far from the creek. And there's a grove, as you probably know, on the way to Ribbon Falls that you walk there.
Uh-huh.
And so there's like 6 redbuds there. So I brought them back and I experimented. And the part of it was I could not get them to germinate. And so I scratched them. So I heard that as people scratched them and none of that
worked.
Those
seeds are kind of hard.
Yeah.
They have a very hard carapace.
So finally I figured it out.
What was it?
Okay, so... I collect the seeds from that batch up there. Then, since they were in that hot, dry spot. It's a hermit thrush, looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked like a thrush.
Yeah. And then when I got them here, and then I get them out of the pods, and then the seed, I put them in water. Oh, I'm sorry. I put them actually in boiling water.
Oh my God!
Yeah, so I would, so I put in boiling water for exactly 60 seconds, and I had like a little stream, so I lowered them in and out, Then I got 8 cartons from the ranch and got dirt and then put the seeds in there. And then after a while, and I had them in the ranger station. In the ranger station, in the old ranger station, there was a table with the sun coming in the wintertime. So I would put them in the sun for a while and take them out of the sun for a while and back and forth. And they started popping up, the little seedlings. And then I took a spoon and spooned them out of the 8 cartons and then put them in pots. And then they grew. And then I went to bigger pots.
Jeez.
Yeah. And then eventually to pots that were this high. And
2 feet high.
And then eventually start putting them in the ground. So these are actually from the 80s.
They're from the 80s.
Yeah.
That's pretty early on.
Yeah, and maybe the first year in the 90s. So it's redbud tree.
Well, I'm going to get you with a picture next to that. I'll pause the recording here so we can get that picture.
They're getting older, so they're actually are beginning to bloom.
Oh.
Yeah, so they've been blooming, but...
Flowering, you mean?
Yeah. And then eventually they'll bloom completely because it looks like that they leaf and bloom at the same time. But the older they get, the sooner they get to a point where the blooming before the leaves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's one up at the ranch that I gave to the ranch. It's in their yard. And that one's one of my later ones. And somehow the ones I did later... seem to grow faster. So I don't know why, but they, and so, and those are the last ones I gave to the ranch, and there's two around their building. There's one on the north side at the middle room,
uh-huh.
And there's one that's in their yard, and
okay.
That's the biggest one. And yet that's the one of the last ones to be planted.
When would that one have been planted there in the courtyard of the
residence? It would have been probably still like it would be in the early 90s.
Early 90s.
Yeah, so the one that was planted in their backyard and it's outside was actually a rancher that I gave the tree to, and she planted it, and that was Michelle Barard.
Wow. How did you learn the boiling technique?
Experimenting.
You just experimented. Nobody told you.
No. Hi.
How are you guys doing? Sorry
good.
To interrupt.
No, that's okay.
You guys been speaking since we walked past by before. Sounds like it must be interesting if you're recording it.
Well, he's got a lot of interesting things to say. And.
What's your name? My name's Sean, I'm sorry.
Sean, okay. I'm Wayne.
I'm Shores.
I'm sorry?
Shores.
Shores.
Yeah.
I'm Ed.
Ed, nice to meet you guys.
With the Park Service?
Uh-huh.
Shores?
Yeah.
Awesome. So how many people come through there every day?
Well, it depends. If you're talking about the campground...
Camping.
And when they were completely open, uh-huh. It is 90 to 110.
So how many Park Service people do you need to have to support that?
Park Service, 3 to 4.
3 to 4.
Yeah.
And we had one question. How is the water treated for the latrines here?
Oh, the water is treated at Roaring Springs,
uh-huh.
And it's chlorinated. It's first descended.
But the sewage from the toilets?
Oh, you're talking about it goes to a sewage plant.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and in our feces, we have a bacteria that eats it.
Right.
And what they defecate is clean.
So it's an oxygenation system?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just like in any town.
Cool.
Yeah. Same system. Yeah, and then we have compost toilets also.
Do you guys work with sewage treatment? Sounds like you know something about it, or at least... You work on a boat as an engineer. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to get fresh water in and sewage up.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, there's a guy named Chris. You can ask him. He's actually runs the plant down there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
At the river.
Yeah. You have to see him around. He's a kind of heavy set looking guy.
All right.
Super nice.
I look for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Awesome. Great meeting you guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Ed.
Yep. Have a talk to you again.
Have a great day.
You too.
So the Hiking Backpackers Association, they clean, they help me clean dishes every year.
They come down in the springtime?
Yeah. No, they come in the fall.
In the fall.
The fall is when it's the worst because it's all full of grass.
Oh, okay? Yeah, okay.
And then in the winter, the leaves fall on it, and then in the spring, we just blast the, we shoot the irrigation at full blast and clear it all out. Then it's ready to go.
That's great. Well, we're leaving number 16 and walking past the creekside camps, 7, 8. We're going in here to campsite number 8. We're just making our way south in the campground.
So this is one of our problem sites.
As number 8 is a problem site.
Yeah. As you see how the visitors, even though there's a rock wall here, they keep putting their stuff here. So this is one of my trees I germinated.
Okay.
And see what's happening. This is going under a threat that the land is wearing away towards this tree.
Okay. Well, I guess if I were the ranger here, I might build the wall a little bit higher and plant some prickly pears, but... Or move the wall back and make that part of the campsite.
Yeah, so that's, see, that's one of my trees from the backyard.
Again, we're standing on the south side of campsite number 8, and Shores has a big ash tree that's about 10 or 12 feet high in a cage here on the south side of the campsite. So once it gets to be a very mature tree, it's going to provide shade for campsite number 8. And we can see the stump of a old cottonwood tree that's hollow in the middle. That's the reason they're slowly getting rid of the cottonwoods, because they do get brittle.
So this is an ash tree. And see the back there, that ash tree?
Oh, yeah.
That's where I get, that tree puts out viable seeds.
And this is a big tree up against the canyon wall at campsite 18. There's a big ash tree there, so that has viable seeds.
So that was planted back in the 90s. And it's in site 18 because the rangers after me need to know that they need, that's where they need to collect their seeds.
That's where they need to get their seeds from.
Yeah. See, there's another red bud here.
Another red bud on the northeast side of campsite 18.
So this used to be the group site, if you remember. These three.
Uh-huh.
And we had a change. Somebody came with an idea of changing things. Instead of getting complaints about the group being too loud, we put the group site in the shelter site.
Okay.
But then we had to make this three sites. So what I did, I made an irrigation ditch from the back to here, and another one over there, and then planted all these backers.
So sites 18, 19, and 20 used to comprise the group site, but Shores put in two drainage ditches to make three private sites.
Yeah.
And somewhere here near number 18 or 20 is where the blue goo toilet used to be that I used to clean out by hand. There were two of them in the campground, one on the south side and one on the north side, and it was somewhere right around here that the blue goo toilet existed.
See, look at this tree is leafing out, see?
Yeah, I do see that.
Yeah.
That's an ash tree.
That's a cottonwood, the big one.
The big one is a cottonwood, but the one in front of it is an ash tree.
This is one of mine.
The ash tree is about 30 feet high, and that's one of Shore's trees.
Another one?
Yep, just right here at the southwest corner of Site 9, right between Site 9 and 10.
Uh-huh.
Another ash tree, another mesquite tree just to the north of that. I do like the Baccharis, even though they don't provide a lot of comforting shade because they're not that tall, but you know, it's a native plant that provides some greenery.
There's an ash tree over there.
So we're just coming up to what is currently the restroom, but I think that's probably going to change.
That's the red bud?
Red bud, just on the...
This one is a pretty young one. This is only pretty young one, so...
Oh, yeah, that's only a foot high in that cage.
Yeah. So this is where I can put my yogurt container here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Don't let the beaver find that little hole in the cage. So just going past the restroom, heading south in the campground. Brittlebush is looking sassy right now after that December rain we had.
So I think that I showed you to pretty much the planting part.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think we can maybe talk about rock falls.
Yeah, right here on the south side of the rock bathroom in the campground, there is a rock fall. I don't remember exactly when this happened, but yeah. You probably do.
Yeah, I believe it. I wasn't here for it. It was 93.
Okay.
And came down and went clear across the trail.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, you can see it. Hit this tree.
So this mesquite tree was already here when the rock fell?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it went across.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
I can see the rocks there. Yeah. Look at that. I never noticed that.
Yeah.
But everybody was okay.
Yeah. And no witnesses.
And no witnesses. You're kidding.
Yeah, no.
Winter time.
Yeah, I think I was gone. I think I was in Costa Rica when this happened. At the bottom there, I guess we can go to the bottom end. I tell you a little bit about the rock fall over there.
Okay.
Because I was here for that one. At least I predicted it.
Now we are coming up to some hackberry trees here.
Yeah.
Any story about those?
Well, they were, I was told they bought these at a nursery or something and brought them in and planted them.
So they may not be the native hackberry.
Yeah, they may not be.
We're at campsite 24, and just on the creek side, there's a row of hackberry trees right next to the trail.
And then the other one was, some of them have died. And I kind of investigated what was, they were root bound.
Oh.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Well, you know, you see if it's in a nursery too long in a pot.
Yeah.
The roots can't get out, and so they start going into a circular growing. And then when you put them in the ground, they get fat, and they choke, and they're not moving, so they choke itself out.
Now, right here across from campsite 27, we have a small, 2-foot-high, narrow-leaf yucca.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, are yuccas something that you've thought about planting here? There's not many yuccas. Is that a volunteer yucca?
Yeah, it's been here since I've been here.
But it's probably the same species as the ones that are over in the sand trap.
Yeah.
Interesting. And can you say something about this huge cottonwood that's just been cut recently? There's still shavings everywhere.
Yeah, so they what they're doing is that they check the trees and see how they are, but when they get really old, they're just cutting them down.
And they don't when was this one cut down?
Would be last winter.
Last winter?
Yeah.
So a year ago?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it looks with these shavings all around the big thing that it might have been cut just a month or two ago. But it's been about 12 months.
Something like that, yeah.
Would you go stand over next to the stump and I'll get a picture of you?
And water because it's away from the ditch, but it's doing actually pretty good.
Yeah, down here at campsite 28, there's mesquite trees and some big ash trees. A lot of debris in the cage here. Across from campsite 31 from the August 17th flood of last year. And we're just coming down now to the group sites. Numbers 32 and 33.
That's one of my red buds. See that? You can see the pods.
Yeah. Those are last year's pods.
Yeah.
Is that a viable redwood?
Okay.
Is that a viable redbud?
I haven't done much of that since the that one of my first time I used to, I haven't really done any germinating.
Okay.
Because they're kind of more of a, you know, kind of a decoratory kind of tree, but they don't give off a lot of shade. It's not like any garden. In any garden, you know, they grow big.
Cooler up there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going into the final site here. It's group site number 33. And this is probably the rockiest, boniest campsite left in the campground.
Yeah, and it is also one of the hottest ones.
Yeah.
And so the problem here was that the, you know, I planted these trees, and for some reason they see there's two of them here. And yeah. These trees, even though they're small, are from the 90s, early 90s.
Wow.
And these two are worn and lame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what I was telling you.
So.
Yeah.
Warren Tracy and Elaine Tracy, the former managers. And.
Yeah, and for some reason, this mesquite, which was smaller than those, was lower than that, lower than that tree. That mesquite is taken off and for whatever, and maybe it's too rocky here.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, if you look at the morphology of where we are right here, this is where Bright Angel Creek runs up against the wall.
Yeah.
And typically on the upstream side of these wall barriers, in floods, the flood current slows down and the big rocky load gets dropped out.
Yeah.
And probably right here, and this is where I had Brian Wisher come and help me dig rocks out of the ground where people couldn't sleep because the rock was sticking up 6 inches.
Yeah. And but that tree was planted after these two. But just look at how high that one is.
So on the very southeast side of campsite 33, there's an ash tree that's about 25 feet high, 30 feet. And it was planted after the two right in the middle of the campsite. And those two in the middle are much smaller.
Yeah. But at least it's on a good spot for shade. But then, so I decided to come up with an experiment here. This is kind of an experiment deal.
Okay.
There's no irrigation near here.
Right.
No bubbler here. And so I planted these trees and then put this sign and see if people will water it.
The sign says, and it's an official Grand Canyon site bulletin, it says, "Help me grow. Please water our new trees. Do not hang laundry or other items on the metal wire." What do you think the result of the experiment is so far? Have you noticed? Well, I can see some grass growing down there.
Yeah, so what is funny is a lot of times we only have one group, so the group always goes there.
Right, they always go to the shelter.
So the visitors didn't really water this very much, so we had to water them, okay, and water them. And so, but it's actually going pretty good, though.
Yeah.
And look at here. So you can see this. This one is about the pop right here. See the top?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about the
fleet. It's got buds.
Yeah, it's got.
So how long has it been in the ground here?
It's been about maybe 3 years. So.
3 years.
Yeah, but it's, like I said, it's gone. Part of it is because it's gone through the COVID. We only have one group at
night. Right,
But it's going. But over there, I've tried several times at the last one and never been able to have been successful. And I think I just lost that last one there.
Okay.
But these two are doing really well.
Fantastic.
But you can imagine if this really grows, this is going to be, a nice sight.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get a picture of this because these are two incredible trees that we hope take off here. Okay, exiting campsite 33.
When the sun gets in, it'd be nice. I like this archway.
Yeah, right in front of campsite 33, heading north, there's a canopy of mesquites and that one big ash tree on the west side of the trail, and it's very nice.
Yeah.
So
these mesquites here were already here until about there. Then that's when the planting started. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so these...
These might be Buccello mesquites.
Yeah, and then there's the hackberry. Here. So here's the hackberry.
Oh, that looks very healthy, that hackberry up against the granite dike.
So I thought maybe here we can start talking about floods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me just tell everybody where we're at. We're right here at the south entrance to the campground, and the Park Service has a big sign to let you know where the campsites are and to keep the runners from running through here too loudly. And it's very close to the place where the south entrance to the campground was blasted out with dynamite. And for many years, this entrance to the campground was the only entrance to the campground. And then after a rock fall, it was closed for probably 15 years, 12. 12 years. And you had to go all the way up to the north side and cross the bridge.
Yeah.
I'll just pause the recording for a second and take a few pictures because we're going to tell some stories here. And we are resuming again right here at the sign.
Yeah, me and Emily put this up.
Oh, Emily...
Davis.
Davis. Couldn't think of her last name.
Yeah.
So you guys dug out the hole and...
Yeah.
Wow.
Try to make it look fit in, you know, because it was a metal sign. I didn't like it. So I made wooden borders and...
Nice.
Make it look, yeah, make it blend in more. Yeah, so on this year, I had walked underneath here.
Yeah.
And I also noticed there were three conicals of sand down there on the trail.
Oh, my gosh.
Tiny like that. And I remember when I was in Alaska, then if you saw a little pile like that of ice, then you knew that the glacier was about to break above you, and you would have to run. So I Brian Wisher was working here. So I got him on the radar. I said, I said, Brian, I think there's something moving in the cliff. There's conicals of sand down here. And so he said, oh, I'll go check it out. I'll see if I can loosen things up there. And luckily he didn't do that. He forgot. So he didn't do that. And then...
What time of the day would this have been when you noticed the three cones?
It was in the middle of the day somewhere.
Middle of the day.
Yeah.
Time of year?
It was good weather.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the time of year. It might have been fall, but I'm not quite sure. But it's too long ago. But anyway, 3 days later, that hole falls out, buries this whole place, and all the way it went completely across the creek. The creek still could go through it, but it was boulders all the way across the creek.
That's a big chunk of rock that fell out of there.
Yeah. And this must have been, it had to be before the 95 flood.
Okay.
Yeah, and this came up. Then trail crew went and moved the rocks out, and they were talking about dynamiting it, but then they realized...
That's too much rock.
There's too much rock, and not only that, if you look over there, there's this pink thing is a slab.
Yeah.
And it would probably just put the problem higher.
Right.
And so they didn't do it. So they closed it off for 12 years, and so I kind of kept eye on it, and so now I would tell them if I saw a rock fall or anything. But, and at first, a few months, every once in a while would be another rock down there. But then it stopped. And then for 12 years, nothing fell out of it. And so they decided to open it up. And I said, well, at least put those signs up. But when we go in there, you can see how it looks.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that this rock fall happened before 1995 is a result of them blasting out this trail.
Yeah.
And what it did is it undermined this huge, heavy piece of rock.
Yeah.
How observant of you to see those three cones of sand, because that is an indication. When things start falling, things are moving.
Yeah.
And that was great. I'm surprised to hear it was 3 days later, but... So I think I told you that I've got a guy that was working on the pipeline before the big flood.
Yeah.
He had a picture from right here on the south side of the rock fall.
Yeah.
And a gauging station used to be right there.
Oh, really?
And the 66 flood took out the gauging station. Oh. And I've got a picture of the gauging station before the flood.
That means there's been three out. Because since I've been here, there's been two who have been taken out.
Where were they located?
By the ranger station.
Wow.
Yeah, they even called me one time. Hey, sure, can you go check out the gauging station? Well, it's not there. Oh.
Yeah, so right here at the big cut in the pink dike is where there used to be a gauging station.
Yeah. Yeah, so... So we could talk about floods. So in 95, after this incident, the 95, we had that winter flood. So it was kind of like a 6.6 flood all over again. And
that was the 9-footer.
That one was the 12-footer.
The 12-footer.
Yeah, so it wasn't, that's the one I wasn't here for. But it came in here and took the whole rock pile out of here.
Wow.
It cleaned it up. Yeah. And so that was 12 foot. And that was hitting the sewer line at the upper campground bridge. It was lapping over it. Yeah. Yeah. So Brian had to come down to Indian Garden. That's when the girls got stuck on the island. And Randy Thompson was here for it.
He
too.
Was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think this riprap that we're walking by now on the way to the rock house, this riprap was put in after the granite rock fall.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, and that not only that, they had to repair it again after the 95 flood.
That's right.
And because it sunk, the rock walls start falling.
That's right. You can see where the riprap has sunk down.
Yeah.
It was undercut.
Yeah, it was undercut, yeah. So... Over here,
just coming up to the rock house now on the trail from the campground.
So we had another flood this year.
That's the August 17th flood.
The August 17th flood. And these boulders, so they make rows. The boulders go in rows. So one apparently stops, and then the other ones get boom, 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 boom. So you'll see a lot of these rows going on.
Linear lines of boulders.
Yeah. And it used to be more, but some got knocked down. But this one was kind of a long row. Yeah. And see that boulder over there? That's new. That's from this last flood.
The one in the creek or the one above?
In the creek and the one that's on the... up higher there. That's
so we're looking at the rock, the cemented rock abutment on the north side of the campground bridge and on the upstream side.
Yeah.
And there's two big boulders that are sitting there.
Yeah, one in the middle of the creek and one that's bigger on the shore.
So they're just put there last August 17th.
Yeah. And then see that hole that's underneath the foundation of the bridge?
Yes.
That's new.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was a 7-footer.
That was only a 7-footer.
Yeah.
And here we are at the junction where the bridge is on the south side of Bright Angel Creek.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, good.
Okay, so now we're going across the little silver bridge that crosses Bright Angel Creek to the north.
So right here, the fish folks had a receiver for the humpback chub, three of them, and they went clear across the creek, and this is the wiring to that equipment.
Okay.
So. They all three took off, and they're in the river. And we were able to retrieve them.
Oh, you did retrieve them?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but you can see the wire. You can see how it got stretched out. Yeah, out of there. And that, this is a new boulder right here.
There's a big red boulder just downstream from the bridge that we're looking at in the middle of the creek. Probably won't be here long, but
yeah,
who knows? Could stay there a few decades.
And then see where the three people are standing?
Yeah.
That was all underwater.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a picnic table on the north side of Red Angel Creek, just between the trail from the Black Bridge and the creek. There's a picnic table, and water was running on top of that flat.
Yeah.
You can see the debris in the baccharis trees.
Yeah, and the picnic table had moved 10 feet farther, and it was covered with debris, so I had to get all the debris off it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, imagine going all the way over here. Not just a 7-footer.
And remind me again, were you here for the August 17th flood?
Yeah, yeah.
That was at 9 o'clock at night, if I remember.
No, it was earlier than that. It was like a half an hour before dark.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's Chris.
Oh, okay. That's Jerome's
other half.
Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's gonna be a nice deep hole for the sucker fish.
Uh-huh.
We're not sure if they're going to make it up here, the sucker fish. There's two drop-offs over there that wasn't there that came in because of the flood. So then we actually had a second flood this summer, but much later. Actually, almost too late. It was like a 3-footer. And the fish people had put up the weir. And the weir took off. And we were able... So Del and me got it flown out, but it's completely demolished. Wow. Yeah. So this year we didn't have the weir. Yeah.
So Helen told me that there was two trees for your mother and father.
Oh yeah, that's that way.
Do you want to go that way?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's do the since we're doing flood.
Okay. Just coming to the north side of the bridge. So we're just here where the great big sign is near the main trail to the ranch or the Black Bridge. And the trail heads to the south across the bridge. And on the southeast corner of this junction, there's an ash tree that has come up all on its own. It's about 15 feet tall. It's a volunteer, but Shores has a bubbler on it right now to give it some extra oomph until its roots can get down into that groundwater. Right here where the big sign is that everybody sees.
So I designed the sign.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, it's a nice design.
Yeah.
In fact, I have commented on that many times with the
the
rock seating. And
well, the rock seating originally wasn't there. And what happened was the person I was working with, he thought we could just put it in the ground. So we put it in the ground. So I designed it. And me and Frank Corey built it. And then what happened, the feet were getting rotten.
Right.
And then Bill Dabney came down and did that.
Jeez, it's beautiful. I'm going to get a picture of it with you sitting there.
The old legs off and then built this thing.
Oh, I see. So the wooden supports that come up from the rock wall were the original ones. They've just been cut off where they were rotting out of the ground.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So, but he did a great job.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah. And we have to maintain it. We linseed oil it.
Yeah.
Interb does that, actually.
Okay.
Or the Hikers and Backpackers Association does it.
I see there's a sign there that says the Ribbon Falls Bridge has been removed.
Yeah.
Any chance it's going to come back, or is that gone?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
There's so many other projects that has to happen.
Yeah.
That I think they're doing that.
Well, it's not a totally bad thing that there's no bridge to Ribbon Falls, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. There you can see the.
Oh yeah.
The cattails. Yeah.
Look at that. The great big cottonwood tree near the old USGS house is just turning green. Spring is here. Until tomorrow.
So that is the ground level.
Yes.
And look what we did.
It's about 2.5 feet deep right here as we walk towards the black bridge away from the sign. The amount of incision from mule hooves and hiker's boots is about 2.5 feet down into the floor of Bright Angel Delta. Yeah, you can see where that red dirt is.
Yeah.
Still 6 months after the big flood.
This is what I show you. I call it Tombstone Rock. So that showed up in this last flood.
Jeez.
And it stood it up. And then later on the second, the smaller flood, that's where the weir ended up.
Hit that.
And then they stopped it.
Well, I'll take a picture of Tombstone Rock. And Tombstone Rock, we're looking at that. That picture was taken looking directly south just before Bright Angel Creek comes into the Colorado River. And it looks like some more woody debris was brought in into the channel there.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a big flood.
Yeah.
Would you say the crest of it was here a half hour before dark, or did it crest after it got dark?
Well, usually the flash floods, when they come, they crest, the head is the crest.
The head is the crest.
Yeah, and then it starts to go down. And usually, in most cases, it goes down fast. Like the 9-footer that I saw, it lost 3 feet in the first 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a woody pile, a woody debris at the front of it, or not necessarily?
Well, it's funny because I seen different things. I've seen a fair amount of, you know, different sizes. But I've also seen ones that have bow waves.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen the brown wave coming, the big wave, and in front of it, maybe 5 feet out, wood debris, but the water's clear. But it's literally like on the front of a boat.
It's the regular creek water that's being pushed ahead of the flood water.
Yeah. It's totally bizarre. But not every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think these creeks move at variable speeds as they encounter obstacles or curves.
Yeah. And I think the big obstacle is that, because, you know, what's impressive is not so much how high it gets, it's how wide it gets.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what, because on the 9-foot wave I saw, I was on that upper campground bridge when and I watched it go under. And it that was what it got me was on both sides of the creek, the bushes were being swallowed down. You know, they were just, and that was the impressive part of the whole thing.
Jeez.
It was like, yeah. And the noise. The noise and the smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you had been lounging right next to the creek like many campers do.
Yeah.
When this last flood in August came through, most people would have had enough time to say we need to get away from the creek. I mean,
I had warned people.
Okay. But your warning came because of your knowledge of what to look for in rainstorms far away from you.
Yeah.
If you had just been by the creek and it started to approach,
they
would have heard it first and smelled it first, seen it first.
Hey, how are you?
Hi.
Good, how are you?
Good, excellent.
They may have heard it if they were in the campground.
Okay.
But sitting in next to the creek...
They might not.
And they usually are seeing the wrong way. They're facing downstream. They may have not heard it coming and saw it coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, in August, a lot of people are in the creek, but thankfully, a half hour before dark, most people are out of the creek.
Yeah.
Wow, what a fantastic tour, yeah, all the way from Phantom Ranger Station,
yeah,
to here.
Yeah, so what I wanted to do is to go back up, and I'm going to show you some, since we're on that subject of flash floods.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you the big flash flood story at the Upper Campground Bridge.
Okay.
Since that's where I was standing when it happened.
We'll be there in just a moment.
See this rock there? You see it's black sitting on,
yes,
top of the rock? So that fell just a month ago.
That's what?
Fell a month ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it happened at night, and people in the campground, some of them thought it was thunder.
That's incredible. I'm trying to see where it might have come from. We're right here across from campsite 28. We're looking over to the east side of Bright Angel Creek, and there's a black rock about the size of a coffee table, much thicker, sitting right at the edge of the creek, and it came down from up above. When was that?
About a month ago.
And that looks to be the only rock that came down. There's not a debris field around it.
Yeah, there were some rocks laying on the trail.
Wow.
Yeah. In the 95 flood, the winter flood.
Okay.
That's sitting on the wire.
That's the 95 flood?
Yeah. And that one was the August 17 flood that just happened. That round boulder in the middle there.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get a picture of those two boulders. We're right here in front of campsite 26, looking from the campground trail towards Bright Angel Creek. And there's a big red supai boulder sitting on the riprap that was put there in the 95 flood. And then out in the middle of the stream, there's a smaller limestone boulder. I'll take a picture of that right now.
So the story that happened was the two floods of 97. Okay, so I had been checking the weather. Everything was just like, you know, the clouds were going slow in the morning, so it looked like there was a day for maybe we'll get a flood. And so I had gone through the campground and told everybody, you know, get away from the creek, whatever. And then I got word. I called the North Rim, and they said that they got 2 inches of rain in 1 hour. And so everything was coming together. And then I went down to the rock house, and there was somebody at the rock house, and I was explaining to him, and they were guests of with Frank Corey. And so I was telling them about it. And when I was telling them about it, I said, it sounds like a thunder, but it keeps going. And I go, just like that. So I said, run outside. We ran outside, and right when I came out the door, the head of it just went under the bridge, and the water jumped on the other side of the creek where that big boulder were top, went up, and actually the very top of the crest of the wave got out of the creek bed, and it flowed towards the sign, that the bulletin board went there, and then on the top of the whole wave was the white tubes surfing the wave, but luckily lengthwise with a creek. And then when it got to that split, it made the big split, and the tube landed exactly on that junction. And it was probably four pieces connected together.
And this is part of the irrigation pipe from upstream of the ranch.
Right. And then, and then I walked over here and just kind of walked and looked at everything we could see, you know, and nobody, I notified dispatch. We just have a big, I mean, the water was on that bridge because it's a tighter, it's higher there. And it looked like it was just below the metal of the bridge, the top of it. And then I called dispatch. You know, that we had a flash flood, and are you okay? I said, well, right now I'm kind of going through the camera and see if I have any panicky people. And because there's somebody missing, somebody's going to run to me, you know. And I said, notify Pipe Creek, because Sandy Hand was over there dealing with a medical and was in the house there. So I'm making sure that they understand that there's probably a flood heading there, because I, over the radio, I can hear the rangers saying there's water coming down off the cliffs on both sides of any gardens. And so then, so we had that flood. The next day, we brought out the Polaris, and ranchers and rangers, we picked up that white tube, and we carried it all the way up back to the ranch. So that was the in-between day. And that was the day that Tom Meyer went off Teo and came down haunted and came to here.
Through Phantom Creek.
Through Phantom Creek, yeah. Then, then the next day, same thing started happening. They start off the same way, slow moving. They were still in that slow moving water. Oh yeah, and it was also El Nino on top of it. And so I started to go around and talk to people that there's probably going to be a flood coming down, so don't go by the creek. So I went up and down the creek talking to people, and I said, if you see new people coming in, please tell them, because people are still walking in. And then I went back to the station, and Brian Wisher was here. And so I was talking, and all of a sudden I heard this coming. All right. And I have been in the station before. I've already heard them coming, and I can run out, and right when I get to the creek, I can see the head go by. This one, I said, yeah. And this one here, I was just too late.
Yeah.
Because it was already going under the bridge when I was coming out of the bridge. So I heard it coming. And I said, oh, it's coming. And it's like usually about 45 minutes later, okay? And that I realized that something might come. And then so I ran out of the ranger station, headed for to the creek bank, looked in, nothing. Nothing was going on. I thought, what the hell? And I can hear it coming down the canyon.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God, this is, they hear it already? So I ran down to this bridge and looked down to make sure nobody was in the way. And nobody was in the way. And at least what I could see. And then I looked back up north, and here it comes. And it was like this big blob of brown water coming. I mean, it was amazing. And I said, what was really impressive was how wide it was. And all the plants or bushes were being, like, being swallowed up. And it goes under. And I could tell that it was going under the bridge. And so I stayed on the bridge. And then it went under. And the smell, I mean, it's just like thick muck smell, instantly. And then the noise. And then all of a sudden it went under the bridge, and it took off this way, and we kept going. I later went down here, and the maintenance guy didn't move the Polaris, so the Polaris kind of got hit that we had. And then, then we were down there. Also, we hear somebody got hit by lightning on the West Rim Drive, and they were doing CPR. But that guy survived. And then right after that, somebody had come into the ranch and said that his sister got swept away by the flood.
Oh.
Yeah. And so then I ran up and I met the guy. He was bleeding from the back of his head. And before that, Warren and went up, and I think maybe Elaine too, and I think somebody else too, went up to Phantom Creek to watch the flood come out. All right. And because they had heard that on the 7-foot flood, the one that was 2 days before, people got hit by water on the trail when it came out, because it didn't make the turn fast enough.
Right.
And so then, so they wanted to see that. So they come up, but while they're going up there, they see this guy running like a madman. Didn't say one word to them and ran past, heading for the ranch. And then when he passed, they saw he was all wet and he had this blood on the back of his head. So then So anyway, I come on up and talk to this guy. I said, well, I thought, I said, well, if he survived, maybe they survived. You know, that was my thinking. But he was like convinced.
Where was he at when it came upon him? Was he on the North Kaibab Trail?
So he told me a little bit, and he was up the Phantom Canyon, but not very far. He was below the little waterfall, that first waterfall.
Okay.
And then
the two others were above the little waterfall.
No, they were together.
They were together.
They were together. And it was his sister and his brother-in-law. And so they saw the water going, and then they ducked behind that one rock that you pass that's leaning. You know, mm-hmm. you can see it actually from the north side. If you look back, it's a rock that's leaning this way. And so they ducked behind that. The water went around them, and then all of a sudden, this wave came over the rock and hit them. And that's then he said, he just tumbled, and next thing he knew, he was laying on top of the North Kaibab Trail.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Which made sense, because what the people reported 2 days before on the 7-footer. So this was a 9-footer. Yeah, and so I run up there, and right after Clear Creek Trail, I was actually on the trail, but I was walking on water, but the water wasn't really moving, so it was safe to go in across that. And then I ran into Warren and Elaine, and at least Warren. I think Elaine was with him, but definitely Warren. And then I asked him, where's the water? Is the water coming out of the Phantom? Because, yes, water's coming out of the Phantom. And so then I went up. And the reason why I asked that, on the 7-footer, the storm basically just hit Phantom Canyon. But the second storm, I hit a much bigger area.
And it sounds like it came down Bright Angel Creek first before the crest came down Phantom Creek.
So Warren was on his way back, and he said that the creek was clear up ahead.
Okay.
It's all coming out of Phantom. But when I got there, and actually I was with Warren, he came back with me looking for this, these people, and the water had changed even coming up from the north, but it wasn't as big.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a definite second wave had come in. Yeah. And then, but then I started thinking, well, I don't see anything. I'm heading out of here. I think I ran into Brian somewhere in the long, and he kind of went again too. But I went and started coming back here because I didn't know, is there going to be a second wave or what, or even more waves, right? Meanwhile, they had launched a helicopter, and Andy Langford was in the helicopter, and I was able to talk to her, and I just asked her if she could check all the drainages up there, make sure there are no more waves coming at us.
Mm-hmm.
And because, there's all these, right? There's Wall Creek, there's all those, right? They can mm-hmm. all be sending another wave towards us. But, and there was no more waves. So I came back, and this place was, everybody had left the campground and was up there. And it was amazing, that flood. But anyway,
probably the biggest flood you've seen, or at least the most impressive flood you've seen.
Yeah, it was the most impressive, and it was the biggest one I've seen, because I wasn't here for the 95 one. But that wasn't a flash flood. That just was rising water, the 95 right. one. But that was pretty impressive. And the noise. Yeah, and it's like you're in in L.A. and there's an earthquake that doesn't stop. That's what it felt like. Just
incredible.
Yeah, and
of course the brother-in-law and the sister were not found.
They were found a couple of weeks later.
Okay.
And they were 20 and 40 miles downriver.
Yeah. 20 and 40.
Yeah. And then there was after the flood, and it didn't last long. Just like usually by the time it got dark, the creek was back to normal, just muddy.
Jeez.
You know? And so anyway, they sent down a lot of rangers came down looking, doing the search. The helicopter was here flying back and forth. And we were still getting flash floods throughout the next days during the search, like 2-footers, 4-footers and stuff. And they had a dog team down here. And the dog team, I said, well, how can it tell between a dead fish and a human? And oh yeah, they can tell. And I said the dogs are so good that they can actually tell which rock they hit.
Oh.
And I said, but the rocks are not here. And they don't know. I said, yeah, it wasn't like a flash flood on top of a creek bed. No, the creek bed was on the move too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I said the rocks have changed. You know, and I said, I see things there, they're gone, and things that here that I never seen before. The ground was on the move. And anyway, so we started doing it, and I was helped with the team, one of the teams, and we dug up so many fish. Fish after fish, you know, fish were in the bushes and in the muck and stuff. And then and so they kind of went that one in. And they kept saying, oh, look like they must have went down, you know, whatever. And then they got down there, and they started going downstream a little bit. And then they said, oh, we're getting still a smell from the creek. And I kept saying, no, they're not here. They're in a river. There's no way they could have. And if they did even stop for a second, they would have been pulverized by all the boulders. But they didn't connect, and they didn't see it. I think it's one of those things you have to see it to understand it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
it's not just water.
Yeah, it's not just water. And then, like, you know, like over there when I would make that current, that the water was, like, zipping up like a jet.
Yeah.
You know? And even here, there was, like, jetting. I mean, when you looked at it, you would swear if you put your toe in it, you would be gone. So it was just moving so fast.
What a description. That's 97, July, yeah. Or August, I'm guessing.
August.
August.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the same year that we had that. Same year, that incident at Perea. They also had two lost in Havasu and two in Zion.
Jeez.
Same year. And then later on, they had that hurricane enhanced. What broke down the dam, dirt dam down in Wickenburg. So that was that El Nino summer we had.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was crazy.
Thank you for that story. I mean, that's incredible. And by the way, this story was narrated right in front of campsite 27 and 26, right here in Bright Angel Campground. I'm just looking at the boulder that was placed there in the 95 flood, the red sandstone boulder, and just thinking, how much water does it take to move a boulder, literally the volume of a large bathtub, very large bathtub.
Yeah.
And there's that sandstone sitting right there.
Yeah.
And the
fact that it's, that we can date it.
Yeah. It's sitting on the riprap.
That was put in 66.
Yeah. Impressive.
Yeah.
Well, it'll happen again. It always does.
Yeah. But you can see there, so look at all the rocks that have been pushed off the trail from falling right over there.
Yeah. I almost kind of wonder if maybe they shouldn't move the main trail down to where they had it during that most recent pipeline construction.
Yeah, but it's below the flood line.
Well, it would be.
Yeah.
You don't want to get rid of the upper trail, but for most times, send people lower down away from the cliff. Well, I'm going to pause right here. Okay, we're here at the National Park Service Corral down by the Colorado River. And Shores is showing us a tree that is planted right in the middle of the feed trough, which was a circular rock feature cemented together here. And right in the middle of it is an ash tree. And We want to hear this story for sure.
Yeah, apparently, from what I have heard from the old trail crew, like Randy and that there was a tree here. And so I decided to plant a tree here. And my parents were down.
Nice.
And so we decided we'll plant a tree here. So we planted a tree here. And we had the reason why I had such a high fence, because the mules kept jumping into here and trying to get the tree. So we had that's why the wire is so high.
The mules would jump over this rock wall?
Yeah, there was one mule that just was so big, he can put his front legs in here and get to the tree.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so anyway, then we had a setback because we have some bubbler problems here. It had a setback. And so then I trimmed back all the old branches. And so now it's re-establishing. And you can see there's some, so there's buds on it. See? It's just on the top.
Right.
Yeah, it's ready to bloom. Yeah. So now it has a better chance because the root ratio and the tree size ratio will help it out. And I see I got a bubbler system too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is that connected to? Is it off of the main water line or?
It's connected to the trough.
The trough, okay.
And then I got a tube around, so it's feeding that tree and that tree and that tree and then finally to this tree.
And those are some big ash trees that are there on the south side of the corral.
But this area here, I have very little control of it because it used to be on a bubbler system, and then then people need to use the trough, so it gets it gets overwatered and underwatered, and so these trees get really stressed because of the, it's nothing constant here. So it's kind of a hard one here for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these are actually, it's my third batch trying to grow trees here.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Well, the big ones on the south side look like they're doing pretty good, but I guess they could still dry out if they don't.
Yeah, Well, if you come here and when the leaves on, you'll see that half the tree is dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I said, this is the third batch.
Well, I guess in a way, at least in some areas like this, you're trying to grow trees where they really shouldn't be.
Uh-huh.
I mean, an ash tree probably shouldn't be growing on a rocky delta with full sun in the summer.
But I said if we have a system, because part of the project is to put a new bubbler system, and one of the issues was with the old bubbler system was because we're at the lowest point of that whole bubbler system, the gunk would come down and clog them, and so if somebody wasn't watching closely, they could also go into a dry period. So if they do a new bubbler system that they say can cure this gunk problem, so then they would have a reliable source of water, and even if they get overwatered, they should take off. Yeah. At least theoretically. Yeah. And then they wouldn't be connected to this system if they have them connected to a new bubbler system, and then there'll be a little more consistency to it.
Well, I know when you leave here, your thoughts are going to still be with these trees.
Uh-huh.
And do you have any plans to come down as a tourist and kind of check on things? I know that might be a little bit of a premature question, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
It's hard to say. I mean, I may come back even this summer and maybe camp up on Tonto or something and then just kind of use that as a base and visit the ranch.
Yeah.
But these wouldn't have changed by then.
Well, I guess you've established enough of a relationship with people at the ranch that you could be a guest of a rancher. You could be sponsored, so to speak.
Yeah, but I guess that also depends on the COVID, too,
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the COVID will be over at some point, and...
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't want to intrude their space. But,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, this has been wonderful to take a tour with you and take pictures and a few videos. Maybe in the afternoon we could finish up with some final thoughts.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe do that in the courtyard up at the ranger station.
Yeah, that would give me a chance to hula hoop and have my breakfast, lunch first.
Yeah.
Hey, yesterday I got caught up with my taxes. So
is
I
that
never,
all finished
never,
now?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what if I came up there at 2 o'clock?
Okay.
And we might just talk for another hour about just tie loose ends.
Yeah.
And you might give some thought to maybe a story or two that you haven't shared yet. But you certainly have shared a lot. I think I've got close to 5.5 hours.
Yeah. I got to remind me this. My relationship with scorpions, I've been...
That's right. I have a note in my pocket to ask you about scorpions.
Yeah.
And ringtail cats.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, scorpions is like that. And kissing bugs.
And kissing bugs.
Because I've been nailed by kissing bugs, too. Wampai tigers.
Thank you, Shores.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.